Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is January 13th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Let Me Clear My Sore Throat with a Corticosteroid. And our guest skeptic is Megan Groth. Megan is an emergency medicine pharmacist at the UMass Memorial Medical Center in Worcester, Massachusetts. She has contributed to Academic Life in Emergency Medicine and EM PharmD blogs. She is also part of the Allium capsule team. Welcome back to the SGM, Megan. How's my favorite EM PharmD doing?
I'm doing all right, Ken. Thanks for having me on. I do need to correct your pronunciation of the town I live in. It is not Worcester, even though it looks like it. It's Worcester. It's taken me a year to learn that, but it's Worcester.
So it's like I made a syllable violation there. It's not Worcestershire.
Yeah, you just ignore most of the letters in the middle.
And you just slur right through?
Yeah, right on through.
Thank you for helping me with that. Last time you were here, it was to comment about all the hype taking place over the vitamin C for sepsis study. And we were saying, don't believe the hype. Any new information on that?
You know, Ken, that's a really good point. I haven't seen any new information. And for all the buzz that this generated when it first came out, I really haven't seen that many providers try to utilize this in our severe sepsis and septic shock patients.
And we're waiting anxiously. Like, we want to see more information. And I think all of us would be really pleased if something as simple and cheap as vitamin C could have an impact on sepsis in regards to mortality. I think we'd all be thrilled if that worked.
Yeah, I do think there have been some developments in sepsis management, but I don't think they have anything to do with vitamin C, at least that I've read recently.
All right, so give us a case for today's podcast.
All right, so we have a 50-year-old man who presents with a one-day history of sore throat, cough, and low-grade fever. He's otherwise healthy, with only sports-related injuries in the past. The ibuprofen didn't help, and he's requesting antibiotics so he can get back to work sooner.
Well, patients present commonly to their primary care providers, that's PCPs, and to the emergency department with complaints of a sore throat. In the U.S., adults account for 6.6 million visits annually to PCPs and EDs for sore throats.
Along with this can come unnecessary prescriptions for antibiotics, which is a topic in itself. Even though many national guidelines recommend against the use of routine antibiotics. These are like the NICE guidelines and the European Society for Clinical Microbiology and Infectious Disease.
As more and more attention is paid to strategies for reducing the overutilization of antibiotics and the subsequent trends in antimicrobial resistance, there is a need for other strategies to provide symptomatic relief for these patients.
Acetaminophen and NSAIDs are often used to treat sore throats. While providing symptomatic relief, they can also cause harm.
But Megan, there's been several studies looking at corticosteroids, and they demonstrate some modest benefit.
Corticosteroids exert anti-inflammatory effects by inhibiting transcription of pro-inflammatory mediators in airway endothelial cells. However, previous systematic reviews and meta-analyses have been confounded by the co-administration of antibiotics and analgesics, as well as the variability in measures of efficacy among these studies.
So, Megan, what's the clinical question we're going to ask today?
Okay, Ken, we're trying to find out, are corticosteroids effective and safe as an adjunct treatment for sore throat in addition to standard care compared with standard care alone?
And the reference for this?
This is a study by Sadagirad and colleagues, entitled Corticosteroids for Treatment of Sore Throat, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis of Randomized Trials, in BMJ of 2017.
I always like having the guest skeptic have to pronounce the name of the lead author. This is, you know, because it's one of my weaknesses. I really can't pronounce names. So, great job. And I'm sure you did it way better than I could have.
Yeah, thanks for the challenge, Ken.
You're welcome. All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
All right, so we were looking at adults or children aged 5 and over presenting to the emergency department or a primary care setting with a clinical syndrome of sore throat.
And there was a number of exclusions, and I'll list those in the show notes. How about the intervention?
Patients had to receive at least one dose of corticosteroid therapy.
And what was their comparison?
They called this standard of care or placebo.
And for their outcomes, they didn't really seem to have a primary outcome, but rather many outcomes.
Yeah, this is tough, Ken, because you're sort of at the mercy of whatever outcomes were evaluated for the original trials that they included in the meta-analysis.
All right, so what were the outcomes that they listed?
So of these outcomes, they looked at complete resolution of symptoms at 24 hours and at 48 hours.
And they also looked at what was the mean time to onset of pain relief and to complete resolution of pain. So they were looking at when did you start feeling better with regards to pain and when were you completely better with regards to pain.
They also looked at the absolute reduction of pain at 24 hours.
And the duration of bad or non-tolerable symptoms. So it wasn't just categorized as pain, it was just bad or non-tolerable symptoms.
They also looked at the recurrence or relapse of symptoms. So did your symptoms come back after they originally maybe got better?
And then they quantified how many days did you miss from either school or work.
They tried to capture the need for antibiotics.
And of course, they looked at adverse events related to the treatment. So the author's conclusions were, quote, single low-dose corticosteroids can provide pain relief in patients with sore throats with no increase in serious adverse effects. Included trials did not assess the potential risks of larger cumulative doses in patients with recurrent episodes of acute sore throat. Okay, Megan, let's run through the quality checklist for therapeutic systematic reviews. And in this case, there's only 7 questions. So the first question is, the clinical question, is it sensible and answerable?
Yes, it is.
Did they do a detailed and exhaustive search?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the search that they did with this. How about the primary studies? Were they of high methodological quality?
No, they were not.
And the assessment of the studies, were they reproducible?
Yes, they were.
Do you think the outcomes were clinically relevant?
Yes, I do. I think you can see there were a number of outcomes that they tried to capture here, and I do think they were all meaningful to patients.
Was there low statistical heterogeneity for the primary outcomes?
No.
And the 7th and final question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
You know, Ken, I always struggle with this question. So I'm probably going to say unsure and that it depends. It was probably large enough, but I am not sure about the precision. So I'm going to say unsure.
Sure. I mean, that's a reasonable answer. Sometimes we can't say yes or no. It's not dichotomous. Sometimes it is unsure. It will depend, like my EBM mentor, Andrew Worster, always said. All right, let's run through the key results. The authors ended up including 10 randomized controlled trials with almost 1,500 patients in the analysis. 8 of these studies enrolled ED patients and 2 enrolled patients from primary care settings. 3 of the studies evaluated children, 6 of them focused on adults, and 1 of those 10 studies enrolled both children and adults. When you looked at the corticosteroids, dexamethasone was the most common one used in the trial, and the doses and routes, notice how I said routes, not roots, routes, I am Canadian, the doses and routes varied. How about the overall, because we don't have a primary outcome. How about just an overall gestalt outcome for this study?
I think if you had to boil it down, Ken, I would say the overall gestalt would be corticosteroids provided significant benefit.
Yeah, so if you run through all the different outcomes that they had, yeah, it looked like that the corticosteroids did provide some benefit. And whether it was statistically significant versus clinically significant, we'll get into that. And I'll list all of those different outcomes and how many studies were included, what the difference was, and the quality of evidence behind those outcomes. I should note that there were no reported increases in the incidence of adverse effects with steroid administration versus placebo. Megan, it's time to talk nerdy to me, my favorite segment. And you did a great job when you did the critical appraisal of this paper. And so you have the first nerdy point.
Okay, Ken. The first point is the relationship between the quote-unquote standard of care and steroids. One study included in this meta-analysis didn't report whether or not subjects received adjunct antibiotics and or analgesics. For a meta-analysis focusing on the clinical question stated, it's difficult to understand why this study was included when the standard of care was so ill-defined. For all the discussion on the confounding effects of antibiotics and the rationale for the prescribing of corticosteroids to potentially decrease the overutilization of antibiotics in pharyngitis, I wish these points could have been addressed in a more rigorous manner in this meta-analysis. The authors mentioned that the impetus for performing the study was the TOAST trial, as a few systematic reviews on this topic have already been published with varying conclusions. The TOAST trial was supposed to address the effectiveness and safety of steroid monotherapy for sore throat, but nearly 40% of all patients in that trial received a prescription for antibiotics. It wasn't reported how many patients actually ended up taking the treatment course of those antibiotics. What would be really nice is to have the full data set from all these trials regarding who got antibiotics and who didn't, and to do a subgroup analysis on the pooled data to see what effects steroids had by themselves. Ah, to dream nerdy. The last piece to mention about this point is the relationship between the decision to prescribe antibiotics and the decision to prescribe corticosteroids. The TOAST trial included in this meta-analysis attempted to get at this, but it's a bit complicated. Do you give a patient a corticosteroid as an alternative to antibiotics because you feel like they're expecting you to do something more than tell them to stay hydrated and take over-the-counter analgesics? Or if you feel really bad for the patient, do you prescribe both? Is your decision to prescribe corticosteroids independent or your decision to prescribe antibiotics? If not, how are they related? I'm interested in your thoughts on this. Please leave comments on the blog or Twitter with what you think.
So many more questions. All right, the second nerdy point was about patient-oriented outcomes. What's the most important thing to patients? Is it the onset of pain relief? Is it time to complete relief? Is it pain relief at 24 hours? I don't know. But from my perspective, I want to be better sooner, with enough improvement to resume my normal activities, and have a shortened duration of illness. Other people might value other outcomes, though. I don't think we should be pushing for a complete resolution, though, at 24 to 48 hours as a goal. We can cause some serious harm and overtreatment in trying to achieve such a goal. In addition, just because it was statistically significant doesn't mean it was clinically significant. Does it matter if the onset of pain relief is 5 hours sooner or the time to complete resolution is 11 hours shorter? I don't know.
The third point, Ken, is steroid dosing equivalents. This is my bread and butter as a pharmacist. The authors refer to a single low dose of corticosteroids in their conclusion, but is this really reflective of the studies they included? Two of the 10 studies used steroids for a 2-day duration. The remainder used a single dose. Most studies used dexamethasone, but some used oral and some used the intramuscular route. It's helpful to take a step back and compare some of these doses, though, because I don't think they're all apples and apples. The three studies that focused on children used oral dexamethasone at a dose of 0.6 milligrams per kilogram with a max of 10 milligrams. Let's think about that for a second. An 18-kilogram kid in this study would get 10 milligrams of oral dexamethasone. That's the same quote-unquote low dose that's referred to for two of the adult studies where grown-ups were also given 10 milligrams of oral dexamethasone.
So you're really not talking apples and apples. You're talking apples and watermelons.
Apples and watermelons, yes. It's important to note that there's wide variability in what some practitioners refer to as low-dose and high-dose steroid regimens. But a publication in the Annals of Rheumatologic Diseases in 2002 from an expert panel of rheumatologists seeking to clear up the nomenclature around steroid regimens defined low-dose as 7.5 milligrams per day of prednisone equivalents. That's just over 1 milligram per day of dexamethasone. The 10 milligrams of dexamethasone used in many of the trials in this meta-analysis equates to about 67 milligrams daily of prednisone equivalent, or well into the high-dose steroid classification. You may say it's only a single dose, so you could also refer to it as pulse therapy, but it's hard to figure out how the authors determined these steroid regimens could be called quote-unquote low dose.
The fourth nerdy point is about the difference in pain scores. In the author's conclusions, they state that corticosteroids can provide pain relief in sore throats. It's interesting to look back at the previous evaluations of this intervention and how each has chosen their primary outcomes. In 2010, Wing and colleagues chose to focus on the time to, quote, clinically meaningful, end of quote, pain relief, and found a 4.5-hour difference between steroids and control. We'll come back to that phrase, clinically meaningful, in a second. The Cochrane Review, published in 2012, concluded that steroids were beneficial by instead focusing in on the time to complete pain relief, which resulted in a 14.4-hour difference between steroids and the control group. The present analysis arrives to their conclusions through a few different measures. Five trials report complete resolution of symptoms at 24 hours, with the evidence favoring corticosteroids. And four trials report resolution of pain at 48 hours, which again favored steroids. However, of the eight studies that report time to onset of pain relief, there was only a 4.8-hour difference between groups. Time to complete resolution in this meta-analysis resulted in an 11-hour advantage of corticosteroids over control. And finally, when the VAS was measured at baseline at 24 hours, those patients who received steroids showed a 1.3-point lower pain score than those treated with placebo at 24 hours. And SGEM listeners will remember, because we've talked about this before, that it's 1.3 points on a 0 to 10-point VAS is considered the absolute minimal difference you need to claim clinical significant difference or reduction in pain. And this seems like a whole bunch of different ways to measure the effectiveness of the same intervention.
The fifth point, Ken, are comments on safety. The authors stated in their conclusion that single, quote-unquote, low-dose corticosteroids can provide pain relief in sore throat with no increase in serious adverse effects. We already talked about what they've referred to as low dose, but I'm not confident in this meta-analysis being able to comment as strongly on the safety of the intervention as the authors apparently seem to be. There were two of the 10 studies they included that didn't report evaluating adverse effects at all, and so they were documented as non-reported. If they weren't explicitly evaluated, I'm not sure it's appropriate to assume the intervention was safe. Furthermore, the studies included had primary outcomes to determine efficacy and likely weren't powered to detect differences in what I would surmise are the uncommon occurrences of adverse events.
And this is a common problem we see in a lot of studies, that adverse events and harms are systematically underreported. And then when you combine studies that systematically underreport harm or adverse events in a meta-analysis, you're only compounding that bias. So I think it's really important to remember that when we're commenting on safety. So I'm glad you brought that up as the fifth, my favorite number, point. But it's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
It appears that a short course of steroids may help with some measurements of pain relief in patients with sore throat, depending on how you're evaluating this, though it's unclear whether these effects are due to steroids or other interventions like analgesics and antibiotics. Additionally, the studies weren't rigorous enough to definitively comment on safety. The author's conclusion may have overstepped a bit in their claims that a single low dose provides pain relief without increasing adverse effects.
Okay, how about an SGEM bottom line?
All right, Ken. Steroids appear to provide a modest benefit to patients presenting to the emergency department or primary care providers with a sore throat.
And how about a case resolution of that 50-year-old man who is looking for some antibiotics?
So using some shared decision-making, you discuss the evidence for different treatments. This includes over-the-counter analgesics and NSAIDs, not needing antibiotics, and considering corticosteroids. He decides to try 10 milligrams of dexamethasone.
So how are you going to apply this clinically? Because we've been talking about how do you put this in context, and that's evidence-based medicine. You know, you've got the patient in front of you, you've got the literature to inform or guide your care, and then you have the patient's values.
So Ken, I'm a little bit concerned that corticosteroids are going to be used indiscriminately for sore throats Given the potential side effects, cumulative doses, and the use in children, I'm going to be cautious. This means I'll not be routinely recommending corticosteroids for sore throats.
So, what are you going to tell this 50-year-old man? And Megan, just pretend you're talking to me.
All right, Ken, you have a sore throat, and it's most likely from a virus. Taking acetaminophen or ibuprofen can help. Antibiotics do not treat viruses and can lead to diarrhea and an allergic reaction. We could try one dose of a steroid medication. There's some evidence it can shorten your illness and get you feeling better quicker.
So you're not just going to tell me I have a man cold?
And I won't tell you to suck it up, Buttercup.
All right. Well, that brings us to the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Dave Lemonick from Pittsburgh, PA. He knew two Swedish chemists, Niels Lofgren and Bent Lundqvist, discovered the compound we know today as lidocaine in 1942. It was clinically introduced by Dr. Torsten Gorn, who was the first physician in Sweden to specialize in anesthesiology. Megan, what's the question this week?
All right, Ken, corticosteroids differ in their glucocorticoid, or carbohydrate metabolism regulating, and mineralocorticoid, or electrolyte balance regulating activity. In humans, what's the main glucocorticoid, and what's the main mineralocorticoid?
So it's a two-part question. They're going to have to get the main glucocorticoid and the main mineral corticoid, right?
Sorry. It's so hard.
Well, if you know the answer to this week's question that I can't pronounce, then send an email to thesjam@gmail.com with Keener and Ken can't pronounce anything in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there are some other FOMED resources on this, and we'll list those in the show notes, but I want to thank our fave PharmD guest skeptic, Megan Groth, for coming back to the SJAM in 2018.
I'm super happy to be here, Ken. I always love coming on this show.
Oh, that's really nice. But if you want to see Megan Groth in person, you can coming up.
Yeah, Ken, I'm really excited about this. This year, I was on the organizing committee for the Vermont Emergency Medicine Update Conference. It's in Stowe at the end of January, January 28 to 31. You can visit vtemupdate.com. We've got some awesome speakers this year, including Josh Farkas, who you might know as Palmcrit, Mike Loria, who you'll know as Rhesus Padawan from Twitter, my colleague Kyle DeWitt, who's Emerge Farm on Twitter. I'm really, really excited about this year's conference.
Oh, no, you're not excited. You're stoked.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Hey, I just came up with that. You know, medicine and comedy, it's all about timing. All right, so as the guest skeptic, you get to give the SJAM tagline in a New England accent.
New England accent. Oh, that's really tough. They just drop all the R's here. It's kind of funny, and you don't have that many in your tagline. I was practicing. I can try. So remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.